From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. President Donald Trump made history on Sunday when he became the first sitting U.S. president to step into North Korea, accepting an invitation by leader Kim Jong-un. Meeting Mr. Kim in the Demilitarized Zone, or DMZ, he stayed on North Korean territory for only about a minute before returning to the South Korean side. After what had appeared last year to be major progress in U.S.-North Korean relations, ties between the two nations soured. But Trump and Kim, who claim to have a personal affinity for one another, seem ready to revive a détente. It's not yet clear what the terms of the détente will be. Some are speculating that rather than requiring North Korea to give up its nuclear weapons technology, the Trump administration may only require a nuclear freeze. My guest is Hyun Lee. She's the U.S. national co-organizer of the group Women Cross DMZ. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Sonali. Thank you for having me.
So this space where this historic meeting took place, can you describe it for us? I mean, we've had sort of meetings in the past, but we haven't had a sitting U.S. president cross over to the North Korean side before.
Yes. So the DMZ for the Korean people represents a very painful scar that cuts across the Korean Peninsula. It was once the most heavily militarized areas in the world. It has maintained 70 years of artificial national division that has separated tens of thousands of families. So to see the leaders of the United States and North Korea, countries that have been locked in a perpetual state of war for the past seven decades, actually stand there and shake hands is pretty historic. Now, do I think that Trump really cares about Korea and global peace? No, of course not. I don't think he cares about anything besides himself, and going to the DMZ on a whim is all but a political show ahead of the 2020 election. But having said that, I think this issue is actually larger than Trump. This is about the fate of 80 million people on the Korean Peninsula, the 28,000 U.S. troops that are still there, and also the security of the American people who are now within reach of North Korea's nuclear-tipped missiles. So this is about ending seven decades of Korean War. We really need to get diplomacy back on track between the United States and the DPRK. And the talks, as you mentioned in your intro, have been deadlocked since the breakdown of the summit in Hanoi. And I think the handshake at the DMZ might be the breakthrough that we need to get those talks back on track.
So if the talks soured, partly it was because when the two sides actually began to dig into the details, they didn't like what they found in one another. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, I remember, was singled out by North Korean leadership, and they just didn't like him. They didn't like his leadership style. Isn't there a risk that whatever soured that relationship before is going to sour it again? I mean, we can't very well have Trump and Kim, the two leaders actually sitting and hammering out the details of an agreement.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. Moving forward, it's not going to be easy because we've been here before, right? Kim and Trump met in Singapore with lots of fanfare last year. They agreed to build new relations, and then almost immediately, Bolton goes on national television and is basically speaking from the old talking points. He's talking about maximum pressure and intensifying sanctions on North Korea. Stephen Biegun, who is the special envoy to North Korea, he says the U.S. is now ready to talk about peace and denuclearization as two simultaneous parallel tracks of discussion. I think that's actually a very positive sign, but we've also heard that before because he said that before the summit in Vietnam, but then Trump showed up at the summit and then insisted that North Korea give up all of their weapons before the U.S. makes any concessions. So I'm cautiously optimistic. I think the key to peace right now will be Is the U.S. truly willing to move away from what people refer to as the Libya model of denuclearization and actually take reciprocal steps that allows both sides to build trust gradually, and then they build on concrete steps that they have taken and move forward towards denuclearization and also full peace.
So what is the Libya model? Does that require both the U.S. and North Korea to give up on some of its nuclear technology? One cannot imagine the U.S. ever accepting such a thing.
Yeah, I mean, I think we need to... So Washington thinks that the Korea conflict began with North Korea's nuclear weapons. So then logically, the solution it comes up with is we need to eliminate North Korea's nuclear weapons. For the Korean people, whether you're talking about North Korea or South Korea or Koreans overseas, like in the United States, for us, the conflict actually began long before that. 70 years ago, the unresolved status of the Korean War is at the root of the conflict, and that is why the U.S. has had 28,000 troops there all along. That's why families are still separated. Both North and South Korea are so militarized, and people there have been living with constant threats of war for the past seven decades. And that is why North Korea actually turned to nuclear weapons. So for us, the solution is to end the Korean War. Most people do not know that if a war resumes on the Korean Peninsula, the U.S. is automatically involved in that war. Why? Because the U.S. still has wartime operational control, which means that in times of war, the U.S. commands U.S. and South Korean troops. And so the U.S. can be involved in a very costly and protracted war in that region. And the American people, I believe, are tired of endless wars. You know, we need to shift resources away from war and invest in human needs like healthcare and creating jobs. The Korean War is the longest ongoing U.S. conflict right now, and we need to start by ending that war.
So the New York Times on Monday speculated that the Trump administration might be moving towards this idea where it would tacitly accept the North as a nuclear power. I'm quoting from the paper, something administration officials have often said they would never stand for. This would amount to an effective nuclear freeze. What do you make of this?
Yeah, I think this is actually a very pragmatic and realistic solution because if you look at the situation from the North Korean perspective, why would they give up the only form of deterrent they have against the greatest military power in the world, a nuclear power that has 28,000 troops just below its border in South Korea, that has B-1 bombers stationed in Guam, 24/7 readiness to fly to North Korea and drop bombs over the Korean Peninsula. The U.S. War plan still remains unchanged. It includes preemptive nuclear strikes. The U.S. policy of first nuclear strike is still on the books. So, if the United States wants North Korea to denuclearize, then the first step needs to be taking steps towards building trust on both sides. So the realistic step is to start with a freeze. North Korea has already said, Kim Jong-un in his New Year address this year has said North Korea will no longer produce, proliferate, test, or use nuclear weapons. So the U.S. should take him up on that offer and say, cap the program where it is. North Korea, Kim Jong-un, when he met with Donald Trump in Vietnam, also offered to dismantle its main nuclear complex at Yongbyon. This is a huge complex that includes some 300 facilities. Kim Jong-un has offered to put that on the table and dismantle it completely. And so the U.S. should take him up on that offer. I think these are actually very significant steps that the U.S. Can begin with rather than sit back and maintain its policy of maximum pressure, which actually gives North Korea more time to continue to develop its nuclear arsenal.
Where does South Korea stand in all of this? It was South Korean leader Moon Jae-in, president, who really should be credited with beginning the whole process around the U.S. and North Korea coming together. Has he been sidelined in the latest talks? Would South Koreans agree to a nuclear freeze?
Yes, I think Moon Jae-in's role has been absolutely critical in this process. The two Koreas signed a historic military agreement last September when the two leaders met in Pyongyang. And this agreement is, in essence, a declaration to end the Korean War. They have already taken concrete steps at the DMZ to demilitarize the area. And they have started to eliminate landmines. Now, Moon Jae-in wants to resume economic cooperation with North Korea. He wants to link their railways, reopen the Gaesong Industrial Complex, a joint industrial complex at the border. The main obstacle to his policy has been the U.S. policy of maximum pressure and the policy of intensifying sanctions. When Trump was at the DMZ on Sunday meeting with Moon Jae-in, President Moon took him on a tour of the area. He showed him the progress that the two Koreas have made in transforming the area into a peace zone and spoke about the importance of reopening the Gaesong Industrial Complex. Mm-hmm. I think if Washington truly believes that the US-ROK alliance is important, then they need to stand with President Moon Jae-in, who was voted in by the overwhelming majority of the South Korean people who ousted his predecessor through mass demonstration. They need to support his vision for peace and inter-Korean cooperation.
Now, let's talk about how Trump's actions are being viewed here at home in the United States. There's a lot of criticism from Democrats who don't like the idea of of Trump giving in to North Korea's dictator, the murderous regime of North Korea, etc. You have a lot of criticism from the liberal press, the MSNBCs. Fox News has totally changed its tune on North Korea, of course, because Trump's doing it. They're very positive about it. But anytime Obama made similar attempts or even made an attempt in that direction, they were highly, highly critical. It was interesting, by the way, Tucker Carlson sort of justified Trump and Kim's friendship, saying that it was okay for Trump to be friends with Kim because sometimes when you're a leader, you have to kill people. I'm sort of paraphrasing, and that was bizarre. And then you had someone like Bernie Sanders saying, I don't have a problem with Trump sitting down and negotiating with our adversaries. I don't want it to be a photo opportunity. We need real diplomacy. In the spectrum of reactions, what is your opinion of these reactions?
Yeah, I mean, I absolutely agree with Senator Sanders on this. I think the fate of 80 million Korean people is what's on the line here. And it should not be exploited for political gain in a partisan chess game in the United States. I hope the DMZ handshake that happened on Sunday will be the breakthrough that we need to get diplomacy back on track. We need to leave Bolton out of the discussion altogether. And I hope that the negotiators, when they start to meet, will be able to work out a process of reciprocal steps that will lead to peace and security for all parties that are involved.
Some were also criticizing Ivanka Trump's role in the whole, the high profile visit. She's sort of trying to make herself into a sort of foreign diplomat as her husband, Jared Kushner. And of course, their main qualifications are that they're members of the Trump family. But it seemed to me that her and Kushner's presence there, unfortunately, was yet another indicator that this was just a photo op, the sort of feather in Trump's re-election campaign cap.
I agree with that. But I think there are larger motivating factors, actually, for the peace talks. Let me talk about them. I think there are two main reasons that are driving this impetus for the peace talks. The first one is that the interests of the three leaders, U.S., North Korea, and South Korea, are actually aligning. This is a rare historic moment, historical moment when that is happening. So first of all, Trump needs a foreign policy win ahead of the 2020 election. And then in South Korea, the South Korean people, as I said, removed the previous right-wing president, voted in Moon Jae-in, a liberal president who has been very outspoken about engaging North Korea. His party also faces a general election last year. He needs to show progress in his inter-Korean policy. Kim Jong-un has made very clear that his priority is to shift his focus from nuclear development to economic development. He wants to resolve this issue and make peace so that he can move on to building their economy. So this is one of those rare moments when the stars have aligned to drive this process forward. The other motivating factor, though, is the broader geopolitics involving China. So as you know, the U.S. and China have been in a competition over who controls the Asia-Pacific region. So China's One Belt, One Road initiative, which is to create this mega trading network connecting all of Asia with Europe and Russia, involving 100 plus countries with China at the center. This is felt by Washington as a huge threat to its interests. In this context, North Korea has been signaling to the United States it will give up its nuclear weapons if the United States meets its security concerns and lifts sanctions. But if not, North Korea has been saying it has other options. Kim just hosted Xi Jinping with much fanfare in Pyongyang. Yeah. Yes. And then prior to that, he traveled to Moscow, where he met with Putin. So this appears to be the main option that North Korea has laid out for Washington. Either continue maximal pressure and risk having North Korea, China, Russia, three nuclear powers aligned against U.S. interests in Asia, or make peace with North Korea so that it is no longer a thorn in the side as the U.S. tries to butt heads against China. And I think especially leading up to the 2020 election, I think the Trump administration may decide that the latter option is a wiser course of action.
Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us today, Hyun Lee. Really appreciate your time.
Thank you very much, Sonali.
My guest has been Hyun Lee. She is the U.S. national organizer of the group Women Cross DMZ. We've been discussing Trump's trip to North Korea. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupatsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.